Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I want to thank you for joining us today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Every week, we want to have honest conversations about what it means to be in one of the sector's least understood, yet most critical roles. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our fall sponsor. Today's broadcast is brought to you by our sponsor, RevUp Software. Give action and purpose to your data. RevUp believes your data should help you make better decisions. Quickly and efficiently transform your data into action, instantly visualize patterns, and understand how to approach your donors based on their affinities and interests. RevUp's fundraising model-based platform, RevUpNP, is designed to give meaning to your data, help you use data to execute against your fundraising plans, and to drive change. To learn more, you can contact our friends at RevUp by visiting them at www.revupnp.com or by emailing Cecilia Poplin directly at cecilia@revup.com. You can also find more information about RevUp's fundraising model platform in today's show notes. Well, without further ado, I want to introduce my guest this morning. Kylie is a member of the team at Tailored Fundraising. Good morning, Taylor. Good morning, Kylie at Tailored Fundraising. Kylie, would you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, sure, Jason. Good morning to you, and thanks for having me. My name's Kylie Hawkins. I've been with Tailored Fundraising for about 9 years now. Actually helped kind of found the company. My family and I are in Nashville, Tennessee, where my wife grew up, so we're raising a family here. And was involved on the development team for an international organization before starting Tailored. So really kind of cut my teeth in the fundraising world at my previous organization. And I helped lead our leadership team at Tailored and really get excited about helping our clients really link their impact and their strategic impact with funding. So I do a lot of strategy sessions and helping to set up our messaging well, but I love what I do and like helping organizations affect the world for positive change.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to today's conversation. We're going to have who's the other member of your team that's going to join me? Jenny is going to join me later this week, and we're going to talk about sort of continue this conversation. We'll see what sort of big ideas she's got to add to the conversation. Kylie, yeah. Before we jump into our sort of subject of the day, I'm interested. There's a comment you made here in your bio. This idea of sort of blending the contextual understanding of what today's kingdom organizations face, an environment where technology and globalization require a new approach to engaging donors. So I tend to be on the other side of that, where I'm saying the donors can be all over the world. But in your case, the people you're helping raise funds for are all over the world. So I think we're both talking about the same thing. So unpack that a little bit for me and tell our listeners a little bit more about what Tailored Fundraising does before we jump into our subject.
Yeah. So Tailored started with kind of a niche clientele with faith-based, kingdom-minded organizations that do a lot of international work, whether it's humanitarian, whether it's actual faith-based work or that kind of thing. So, yeah, absolutely. A lot of our clients from the very beginning are working all over the world. Most of them, the vast majority of them are still Western based, in fact, US based. Uh-huh. But they've got field stuff happening all over the world. And we started really coaching individuals. A lot of these organizations have large funding teams. A lot of them have missionaries that are responsible for their own individual fundraising, or they've got projects happening where that project lead is really takes a very active role in fundraising for that particular project. And so Tailored started on the premise of it really wasn't a lack of information that people had that wasn't the result of poor fundraising. It was really, okay, what do I do with this? Everybody that we bumped into, you know, they had read the books, they had done the short-term trainings, you know, listened to all the information out there. But it's a very different world when I have to translate that into how do I actually get this to work for me in my context with the many hats that I'm wearing. And so, you know, we started to come along and develop specific fundraising coaching 10 years ago to say, okay, how can we actually help these individuals take these principles and build a personal plan for them and then help them execute it? And so we walk alongside individuals, not just telling them the best things to do, but actually holding them accountable, maximizing their strengths, minimizing their weaknesses. And really, I mean, I'm a big sports fan, but just like a coach would, you know, you can sit in the room and draw on the chalkboard all day long, but being out there in the moment is really where the guidance has to happen. So that's kind of how we got started. And we just apply those same principles across individuals we coach or teams that we help lead or even entire organizations that need a funding strategy.
So I think we're sort of on the same page in some of the work that we do. So I'm a sports guy too. I'm a big baseball guy. And I tend to think that the best of us in consulting postures tend to be almost like first base coaches. We're really close to the game and, but we're not playing the game for them. So does what your company do you actually play the game for them or are you just really close where you tell them when to run?
Yeah. Great analogy. And I think, I mean, this kind of gets into a little bit of the details of this, but it's a little of both. Because I think in most cases it's the first base coach role.
Yeah.
It's the role of, in the moment, being there week to week saying, okay, how did this go? Okay, you know, I've got this meeting coming up or we're launching this campaign. What do we really need to do week to week to make this happen? But, you know, sometimes the organization just doesn't have the resources or it's just not working out with them and their team or they're in a moment of transition. That's usually when we step in and when they find us and we start a conversation and saying, you know, we just need more capacity and, you know, we don't feel like we're doing this as well as we could. And how can Tailored help? And so in those cases, it starts as kind of the first base coach, but, you know, maybe to continue with the analogy, sometimes we step in as that pinch runner and actually get to second base and get to third base for them. You know, so yeah, it is a little bit of both.
Yeah, so my son is the bat boy for the local minor league team here where we live in central Pennsylvania. And I remember, I don't know, a couple weeks ago and we were watching the game, you know, they put that little runner in there at the end of the ninth inning to see if they can catch, you know, get another
chase him around the bases,
And he was a little guy. The you don't see this guy. Usually it's a guy who can run the fastest, but he doesn't play any other point in the game other than when they're in a pinch and they need to score an additional run. So they put him over there, and I think on second base. And I had never seen this guy the whole season, and all of a sudden he pops up and I think he scored too. So it was a good it definitely worked. So there's definitely nice. So I have been I a lot of my career was in the faith-based space, and. Okay. The first organization I worked for was a faith-based organization, and I've been around missionaries my whole life, and I've sort of developed an opinion that missionaries aren't the best fundraisers. So what's your thought about that?
I would agree. I would agree and disagree. I think the challenge with a lot of missionaries that we work with is they just got too much to do.
Yeah.
And I think there's a principle there that, in my opinion, you could extrapolate to the entire nonprofit industry that it's really easy to prioritize programming and impact and also really easy to let the fundraising arm of your organization take a backseat. And I think that's the biggest thing that we see. So most of the time it's just missionaries sharing this, okay, I've actually got the work the programming. Oh, and then I also have to, you know, create partnership development with donors and things like that. And I always loved doing the first. That's why I got into this, and I hate doing the second. And so there's a mindset problem there, where, you know, it's just, I really don't see this as much of a priority as I should, or I just don't want to. But I think on the other hand, when you really understand what it is that you're trying to do with fundraising, we really help them see it's an extension of your programming. It's the exact same thing. I tell clients all the time, it is just as much your responsibility as a leader to mature and develop your donors as it is to impact the people that you're working among, whatever that demographic is, whether it's a community or a country or a school or whatever. You know, it's just as much your responsibility to develop your donors and bring them along as it is to reach those people that you're working amongst. So, yeah, I think it certainly is a true statement that, yeah, missionaries usually aren't the best fundraisers, but I think it really is because of just an incorrect setup and usually just a mindset shift that needs to happen.
Yeah, I remember one of those mind shift moments. I was sitting with a missionary friend of mine, and I was explaining to him, this probably was 5 or 6 years ago, and I said, you know, you're in the business of helping people who need a lot of grace. And and I said, but when it comes to the giving side of this, not those who are receiving grace, but maybe help giving grace, need to be pushed, and they don't need a lot of grace. And to sort of grow in their giving, you can't be too graceful. You know, you can be guilty of being too graceful. And I think that's what I have seen when I think about my missionary friends over the years, is that they treated their donors like they would those in the field who they were trying to provide care for. And it's counterintuitive to sort of think, I've got to push you a little further in order for you to grow in this particular area and to sort of strengthen those muscles that say, hey, I can do this. Yeah. I can step up to the plate and sort of move the needle on what my giving capacity is. I have to imagine
absolutely.
That. I have to imagine that has to be part of the conversation you're having probably with your partners. Am I right?
Yeah. For sure. And I think that's a great way to kind of put it. I think what causes that is usually what we find. It's a mindset problem or challenge that I, as the worker, am the reason you're giving, rather than the impact that we're trying to have together. And so, that's usually the first thing that we have to deal with, is a lot of missionaries, a lot of clients who are fundraising for the specific project that they're a part of. You know, they see it as give to me. Am I worthy of your money? We've had a relationship for a long time, speaking to a donor, and, you know, have I really invested in the relationship enough to deserve this, rather than saying, look, you know, this is what I've been called to do. This is my passion. And, you know, we're trying to have this impact. Is this something that you're interested in being a part of as well? And really shifting that focus away from the motivation for giving being just the relationship with them to the impact that we can have together. And I think that's where that, like you said, maybe too much grace or being too lenient is really easy to shed then, because it's like, you know what? I can be bold and I can say, hey, you know, this is something that's important. This is something that, you know, knowing you as a donor, you really want to be involved, or at least have the opportunity to be involved in something like this. You know, let's really go out and make a difference here. Let's give sacrificially rather than holding back and saying, yeah, okay, maybe not even asking in a positive way and a quality way where it's clear for the donor, but confusing it a lot and letting them off the hook, so to speak.
So I've had these conversations with organizations and individuals that I've said, there are people out there who you can partner with, like what you guys do, that you can sort of outsource, or I don't know what language you use, Kylie, but it really seems to come down to a control character, this sort of this need for control on the, because you guys work a lot with missionaries, we'll say the missionary,
yeah.
They're trying to control the process, but they're not really good with controlling the process. And then when I think about what plays out at the lunch table, when you're sitting across the table with a major donor, control is the last thing in the world that's going to, sort of help you move this relationship along. So do you run into that when you're talking to a prospective client and they can't even imagine the idea of relinquishing control to someone like yourself and saying, hey, why don't you do this for us? Help us out. Fill in the gaps where I can't.
Okay. Well, again, and I feel like I'm straddling the fence here, this whole conversation, because I'll say yes and no. okay, no in the initial fine. Conversation. Yeah, absolutely no. And when we sit down and have these conversations, it's usually a, oh, wow, we really need this kind of help.
Okay.
And I really think that
like
you guys.
Like take it, right?
Yeah, but then the rubber meets the road and you get to working together on a day-to-day basis. And then the reality really kicks in where, and most consultants, I'm sure, have to deal with this. I hire you to do a job and then I'm going to take it back from you because, like you said, it's a control thing. Like, let's not word it that way. I mean, one of the biggest things is I'm trying to message based on my impressions or my desires for the organization's brand and message as opposed to what donors are thinking about us and what they need to hear, at the end of the day, it absolutely is a control thing where, am I really willing to trust an outsourced team to put the best message out there or to, engage in the best strategies. It is a big thing. Although it doesn't come up in the initial conversations. It's absolutely, why don't you come work with us? We really need this help. I love these ideas, so.
Yeah. I remember so we've got a friend of ours, my wife and I she went to college, high school with this woman. Her and her husband are involved with Young Life. And I remember her reaching out to me, 2 or 3 years ago, and we started supporting her in not an extraordinary way in terms of financial support, but it really was the process that she couldn't seem to get into her. She's overwhelmed with everything she's doing for this Young Life camp up in the Northeast, and I'm sure does an extraordinary job. But in terms of caring for and nurturing and stewarding and sort of raising the expectations for her donors, I could certainly see a shop like yours coming in, sort of helping her streamline that process, maybe keeping her on task. Could you have actually seen her going back to my, I only know what you guys have told me thus far, you and Charlie, and been on your website once, but do you actually encourage or hold her accountable for picking up the phone and calling me and saying, hey, here's what I'm doing next month, sort of the update sort of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's such a huge part of it is just having somebody that, you've given permission to hold me accountable.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a week by week. Okay. Here's your task list. Here's what needs to get done. And so, a lot of it is just having that, just like, trying to get healthier physically, having a personal trainer or something like that, I think is a good parallel. So much of it is just, my coach is going to bring this up. I need to get this done. And so it becomes a priority. So, yeah, it gets down into the individual, who to call and making those contacts, spending the time and prioritizing just the partnership development that needs to go into it beyond just engaging in the relationships, but even in does our programming strategy link up well with our fundraising strategy? But all of those details, we help, somebody like you've mentioned kind of work through that on a week to week basis. Yeah.
Do you see this going, I get on the podcast every once in a while, and I'm having these conversations and I start to sort of forecast where I think the future's going. And I'm thinking about what it is you all do. And I'm thinking about the mission field and the way that I see the nonprofit sector going and stuff. I kind of wonder if your opportunities like what you guys are doing is far more extraordinary than some of these shops that are working with the larger institutions. Because I think I see the more grassroots, and I know I'm talking to some friends in the UK recently, and they're saying the same thing, that some of these smaller operations and grassroots organizations and even individual individuals doing missionary work like I tend to think that might take off in a whole new way. And it may be the infrastructure with technology and sort of the global awareness that we've created. I don't know if it's the big United Ways and the, Red Crosses of the world that are really going to dominate fundraising, 10 years, 15, 25 years from now. It may be the people that you like you're working with.
Yeah. And we think so, certainly. And, our sort of sweet spot now is, again, working all the way down to an individual, somebody just starting up or who is a part of a larger team but has fundraising responsibilities for their part, all the way up to organizations. Usually our sweet spot is up to $2.5 million in revenue where, they're established, but they're still trying to get to that next level. I think so. I think it's really all about linking donors with the impact that they're having. And that doesn't just mean information, but it really means, I tell clients, you're not looking for another customer. You're looking for another shareholder. You're really looking for an ownership, equity partner here when you're talking to donors. And it really is about how can I bring people into, this work that I'm a part of, and how can they be a part of it as well? So in that sense, I think smaller, even individual sized organizations or projects are really, geared towards helping donors really move into that awareness and understanding. And even, I've never seen this before, but even maybe even part of the decision-making process. And I know there's a danger there of allowing too much, but even to really like, hey, here's what we're doing together. And, as much as it's healthy, like we're thinking about going in this direction or we're thinking about doing this, but regardless of the decision making, really bringing the donor into this is what we're doing. Here's our successes, even here's our failures. And, you're a part of this. So we want you to be a part of it. We don't just want you to be an arm's length funding source. So, I think the smaller organizations, again, even down to that individual size, are really primed to be sustainable in that way as technology and globalization, the whole world is a neighborhood now. And it's a lot easier for a small shop to really do that well, even maybe have an advantage because they can be more nimble and they can be more, quicker to react to donors and just bring them into the process. So,
I would lean into that idea of the decision making. I think we're going to see a healthier understanding of what it means to be peer to peer with your partners, with your funders.
Yeah.
I think for so long we've existed in this space where it was either the vision that had to sort of reign superior, or it was the donor who had to sort of be the more superior spot. But I think the more level playing field we got, and the more we're peer to peer and we're saying, okay, I've got this vision and you've got the resources to help me move it forward.
Yep.
That allows us to make more decisions. But if you think about it, some of the hesitancy that we have about suggesting that a donor is involved in that decision, it sort of originates with this assumption, this 20th century assumption that's rooted in this notion of control, that I've got to protect the integrity of the mission at all cost. And to allow a dollar to creep in and persuade me to do something else, you can obviously tell this is one of my soapboxes. And I gotta say, some of this is coming right from the faith-based space. The idea that money is that money can come in and persuade you to have your mission go in the wrong direction. I think that's just an unhealthy definition of a relationship. I think the funder, the giver and the receiver are like the relationship that I have with my spouse. And if that partnership isn't working, or like the relationship I have with an attorney or with a doctor, if it's not a healthy peer to peer relationship, somebody's got the upper hand and somebody's not going to be happy.
Yeah. And you've used the word control multiple times here. And I think ultimately that you're exactly right. I think it's rooted in just quality leadership. If you have the kind of leadership that does fear, if we invite donors into more of a decision-making process, are we going to, get off point in terms of our strategy? you know, even if you weren't in that situation in terms of your funding, I would have my doubts about your ability to really accomplish the purposes of the organization anyway. You know, good leadership should be able to, again, lead those donors, those partners who want to be a part of it, and be willing to have that conversation with them, you know, and say, you know, this isn't just about doing what we're doing or doing what we want to do and you just fund it. You know, it's very much a part of, again, maturing them and leading them just as much as it is discovering and figuring out how to do that impact, that programming well. I think there's too far. You know, I think when you're jumping all around just because this is what a donor wants to do, or, you know, changing things or going off, and scope creep certainly can get involved.
Yeah,
or,
definitely.
You know, now you're bloated in your programming. You know, that's not what we're talking about at all. We're still talking about strong leadership, good focus, a quality foundation in your organization. But when that's in place, and that has to be in place regardless of your funding model or your funding strategy, when that is in place, you are allowed to really bring donors into that space and say, okay, now that we've got sort of the boundaries of our sandbox here, let's play. Let's figure out the best way to really do this. And what are your ideas and what are our expertise in terms of, you know, being on the ground and doing this day to day? And I think that kind of relationship really, I mean, it's not even about funding at that point. It's about solving a problem together. And that's what it should always be about anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, Kylie, I can tell you're a pretty thoughtful guy. You and I are both you are currently, and I have a history in the faith-based space, working with faith-based organizations. I can think of a number of people who probably need to be talking to you. If one of those folks need to be reaching out to you, what's your suggestion on where they find out more? How do you want them to reach out to you if they're curious and interested?
Yeah. Yeah, well, our website is absolutely the best way to get in touch with us, and that's tailored.fund. So it's tailored.fund, and you can reach us through that. And you know what? I mean, we're all about relationships. Relationship fundraising is the bread and butter of how we set up programs. So I'm going to give my cell phone number. You can just contact me directly, and we can get set up. It's 615-482-0391. And you guys can contact me directly and we'll have a conversation about it. Or our website, again, is a 24/7 way to get in touch with us. But yeah, we would love to have these conversations and even learn from what's going on out there. I mean, we don't pretend to have all the answers, but we definitely want to continue to find solutions together with nonprofits that we're designed to work with. So.
Yeah, I have really enjoyed the conversation, Kylie. I am looking forward to having Jenny on later this week. And I'll put some information about you guys in my show notes. And you're welcome to come back anytime.
Hey, thanks so much, Jason. I've enjoyed the conversation immensely, man. Thanks.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.